So, good weather, huh? That's what I always remember Wellington is the horizontal rain. One of the images I've always liked is this idea of craft of the heart. The whole image of craft and like as opposed to say like just some kind of experience that you get. And from what I've read about the medieval, European medieval craft guilds were very well developed, and if a man or a father would quite often take his son to the master of the craft workshop, so it'd be a goldsmith or a cabinet maker or Stradivarius or someone like that, and the boy would probably be in his late teens, and then he would become the apprentice of the craft master, and he would apprentice with him for about 7 years. And in that apprenticeship, the craft master would be his father, mentor, and the boy would usually actually just sleep under his workbench. It's kind of full on. And then at the end of 7 years, he had to produce a piece of work which was representative of his craft. So to produce a violin or a cabinet or something like that. And then he would become a journeyman, and then he would wander and try to make his own way and try to set up his own workshop. And then when he eventually became adept and was a master in his own right, he could take on apprentices. And so there was a very well-developed guild, guilds like that in Europe, and the guilds protected their workmanship by demanding very, very high standards of workmanship, which is a bit like the Sangha. Like here, if someone wants to become a novice, they have to train for 7 years. So usually 1 year is an Anagarika, 1 year is a Samanera, and 5 years is a Bhikkhu. And then if they have a sense of the Dhamma Vinaya, then they can be a kind of journeyman, and then they can go and seek out other teachers and try other places of practice. And then after some time, if they feel they'd like to teach, they become an Ajahn and maybe have their own place to teach. It's an interesting kind of similarity. But in the writings about craft, there's this common number which keeps coming out, is that to develop the skill of a craft you need 10,000 hours. So it's not like if you're going to do the craft of the heart, it's not a kind of weekend affair. Right? Obviously it has to be a lifetime affair. If you do the math, 10,000 hours, if you did a meditation practice, let's say 2 hours a day, what that's about 730 a year, 10 years is 7,000, so like 15 years. 15 years, 2 hours a day. So are you willing to do that? If you see someone who's really worked at a craft, be it a musician or a cabinet maker, you know they've put in the hours, they've put in the time, and they have a love of it usually, sometimes an obsession. Ajahn Sona, he has a monastery in Canada, he says meditation's, how does he put it? Meditation is not just quality time, it's quantity time. So, in terms of developing the path, there's not just formal meditation, there's the capacity to awaken. Right? Now that's not a formal practice, but it is a practice. So just being, having the intention and determination to continually awaken to what you're feeling. You can do that throughout the day. You have to do that throughout the day. And those hours add up too. So if even the moments add up, even if I get kind of lost in my own fantasies or worries, and then I just keep remembering, this is the way it is now, I'm feeling this way, and have more and more that as the ground of your spiritual life. And then expand that to larger and larger moments, then that has a profound effect. Even though it might not seem like much, each moment of awakening, it might not seem like much, but it is profound, it adds up. And so it's easier to get to your 10,000 hours in that way. And in fact, you have to. But to develop a serious practice of meditation, a sincere practice of meditation, I think you have to love the work. If it's just doing it out of duty because you're a Buddhist, or because you just this week you're feeling confused, you better do some meditation, you know, that won't be the kind of passion you need for this work. So it's more than just kind of it has to be a lifetime dedication, I think. And then if you can find something, part of your craft, which really appeals to you, that kind of makes sense, that is interesting to do, that is pleasing to do, this would obviously be very, very helpful, as opposed to I'm just kind of grinding away on the meditation cushion, you know, I'm doing, putting my in my hours. So some sense of interest. So for me, it's I'm really interested in the Buddhist teachings and the way my teachers teach me, and then if I get confused by something, I'm interested in that confusion. So interest is obvious. It seems obvious, rather than duty, guilt, these different kinds of ways that we approach the work we do. And then in terms of a meditation object, again, if something that first of all kind of fits your personality, fits your nature, that you can apply effort with in a very kind of sustained way. So that on a retreat or whatever you read, you get all kinds of different suggestions of techniques, and there are like many ways to do it and how much you do it and so on, but just that interest in how can I sustain presence, or how can I sustain the open heart, or how can I sustain just a sense of being with the way things are, and then what would I need to train in that? And then from that kind of inquiry, most people find something, breath, sound of silence, opening of the heart, mantra, some visualization, energy fields, the different ways that people find a sense of presence. And then if you get confidence in that, really just really hone it, really get really good at it, really get good at making pianos, or making violins, or playing the flute, just really, really get good at it. And if you think about craft, how you get good at it, you think about weaving or potting or woodwork or cooking or sewing or these different things that we learn, you really learn by doing, don't you? You just learn by doing. So, I was learning how to do card weaving to make these monks' belts that we have, and I had no teacher, and I only had books, and it was like such a spaghetti jungle trying to figure out, God, how does this work? And then I would try it, and I'd just have like yards of yarn just all over the place. And I would sort of discreetly throw it into the garbage because it just didn't work. And then I'd go back to it, and I was also observing how do we learn? I was learning how we learn. And I could see that just at one point, just by struggling with this, I said, yeah, there it is. And I'd get one piece of the puzzle. And then all of a sudden the book would make a lot of sense. Oh, yeah, of course, straightforward. Why didn't I see that before? And then I'd return to it, and then I'd get another piece, and I'd get the warp on, and then I'd figure out how to tie it, and then I'd make a mistake. And so, just in observing how I learned, first of all, I just had to accept the fact that, that I'm going to make mistakes, that sometimes it's just going to seem like it's not working. So in Thai, they say, pit pen kru, mistake is teacher, which is a nice way to look at it. So just the kind of struggle that you have with meditation, you just keep struggling with it. How do you do it? How do you do it? So that if the doubting mind comes up, oh, I don't know how to do it. Yeah, it's true, you don't know how to do it. But how do you learn? You just kind of keep at it. And so then I just learning how to do this card weaving, then after a while it was really quite intuitive that, yeah, this is how you do it, how do you, it kind of all fell together. Now, I know now, I haven't done it for a couple of years now. I was doing it because I had some time taking care of Mom. In a couple of years I'll forget how to do it. Because yeah, I just won't, I'll be clumsy. I'll pick it up much more quickly if I wanted to. So also in training the heart, it is a bit like riding a bicycle, but it's a bit more complicated than riding a bicycle. So if you don't sustain the practice, you get rusty. You get out of shape. And that finer intuition that you develop by constancy, that falls away. So constancy is very, very important. But again, it has to come from a love of the work, an interest in the teaching, a curiosity about the deathless, a wanting to be free from suffering, you know, that kind of inner aspiration. It has to be deeper than just curiosity. So just in terms of this retreat, learn how to, I would suggest, learn how to come to a place of centeredness and stillness and learn how to sustain that in whatever way. So some people really don't like focused meditation, they get too tight. Some people find, like choiceless awareness, they're just thinking all the time. Some people find a kind of broader sense of the body really, really helpful. Some people find a more focused sense. Some people like I really enjoy being with the heart. I like to just bring up a sense of friendliness. I get a sense of what friendliness is as a feeling, not about people. And then I just try to expand that, and that kind of works for me, among other things. But then other people don't feel that. They don't find that interesting. Ajahn Sumedho likes to do the sound of silence. But I think most meditators learn how to do a variety of things. You do learn about like body awareness being very important. You do learn about how to use the breath to compose the mind. You do learn about the open heart and such like. So among the variety of techniques you get, I think certain techniques are pretty standard for giving good results. So body awareness is pretty standard for understanding what's happening both emotionally and energetically in how you are living and practicing. The breath is pretty standard for grounding yourself in the present moment and composing the mind in a kind of really rhythmic way. The heart is pretty standard for coming to that sense of open-hearted acceptance and participation in life from an open heart. The use of correct language, right thought, that's obviously very important, that we're using thought and language in a way which is suggestive rather than oppressive, tyrannical, self-critical, and so on. Or just using language in a continuous analytical process which just makes you think more. So the use of language, the use of thought, that's very important. So there's some very, very basic elements in the craft that one learns and one picks up and one gets skillful at. But a lot of it is it becomes intuitive. You just do it, you struggle with it, and then, I see. And that's very personal. That's not a technique. It's the kind of willingness to keep at the game. So during this retreat, try to see what brings you to a sense of ease, and how can you, and a sense of presence, and how can you sustain that during various practices. All right, let's do some sitting. So just a reminder of intention, the use of intention, thought. So awakening, knowing the way that things are. And then choosing the object of meditation and making that a clear statement in your mind, it's a clear intention. Feeling the object or contemplating the object, whether it's choiceless awareness, breath, whatever. And then that reaffirmation of intention, as your mind wanders, you have to reaffirm that intention. No, now this, now the breath, now no thought. You have to remember that, recollect that. And then as the mind settles on the object, you needn't do that as much. It can be much more subtle. So the kind of directive nature of the practice to remember is the skillful use of thought, and then reaffirming that intention. Learn how to do that first, and then the mind will learn to settle into the present moment.